and updating us.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate y'all, and I'd love to be on the airwaves of WDAI 99.5 FM, so that's always a good thing. Thank you, and we'll let everybody know what's going on tomorrow via social media, so just follow us, and you'll be knowing everything the minute it goes down.
Okay.
Peace and love.
Much love, Rosa.
Appreciate the call.
Love y'all.
Love you, sis.
Okay. Love you, too. All right. One.
Peace.
WBI 99.5 FM. That was Rosa Clemente on the line giving us an update about the BLMLA liberation struggle going down.
And so just a couple of announcements before we get off the air.
Uh-huh.
Much love for tuning in to Rebel Diaz Radio, 99.5 FM, WBAI. Tomorrow, there's an emergency action, 350 J Street in Brooklyn, New York, at 12 p.m. noon. There will be a party in front of DA Ken Thompson's office in Brooklyn.
Oh, man. D.A. Thompson.
The community will be reminding him that, you know, Peter Liang not going to jail is a disgrace and a slap in the face to the family of Akai Gurley and all of those that I've supported. So definitely justice for Akai Gurley. See you guys at the party tomorrow at 12 p.m. noon in front of D.A. Thompson's office.
You already know. You've been listening to Rebel Diaz Radio on WBA 99.5 FM. We have been remembering Fife Dawg. Rest in power forever.
Peace.
Hey, yo, he's having a ball. And, you know, they asked me to get on the mic. And they asked me, can I kick it? Words. Can I kick it?
Run it back. Fife Dawg, rest in power. Queens. Brooklyn. South Bronx, Harlem. Five Car Quest, let's go.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
Can I kick it? Can I kick it?
Yes, we can.
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 Well, I'm gone. Can I kick it? To all the people who can quest like a tribe does. Before this, did you really know what I was? Comprehend to the track force, why? Cuz getting mentions on the tip of the vibe buzz. Rock and roll to the beat of the funk fuzz. Wipe your feet really good on the rhythm rug. If you feel the urge to freak, do the jitterbug. Come and spread your arms if you really need a hug. Afrocentric living is a big shrug. A life filled with, that's what I love. A lower plateau is what we're above. If you diss us, we won't even think of. We'll nipper the dog and give a big shove. This rhythm really fits like a snug glove. Like a box of positives, it's a plus love. As the trial flies high like a dove.
We'll be right back. say you're my girl.
I see. people will follow vanishing rays. An Indian brave rode along one day on a lonely mountain trail, and he gazed below with a heart of woe where the prairie schooner sailed. A vision formed like a mortal storm in the dust of the wagon train. A vanishing race appeared in space, and he sang this sad refrain.
Tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org. And you're tuned to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight, and to all of WBAI as it passes through the hall. Hi, Paulette.
Hello, Kathy.
We are going to have a easy morning this day. We just had a full moon, I believe, or are about to have a full moon, something of that nature. I think we're on the other side of the full moon. So that should be fun. It was gorgeous. I was leaving a couple of days ago, and the moon looked absolutely full. It was a little bit early in the evening, so it was low in the sky, and it was this huge, huge moon, and it was right behind the clock tower. What is it? The Williamsburg Bank, old bank tower?
Yeah.
And just above the moon was this huge, what looked like a star, but probably too big to be a star, so it was probably a planet. I don't know which one, maybe Saturn or something. But it was the most gorgeous thing, and I take out my phone to try to take a picture. Didn't work. It didn't work. All I got was a blur. So maybe someone got a beautiful picture of the moon, and they can send us their pictures of the moon. Because, you know, the new moon is always very special. Especially, you know, I'm a Cancerian, so the moon is always special. It is my governing celestial body, I guess, for my birth. So I'm always paying attention to the moon. I'm sensitive to it. Mm. And it was gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous.
You know, nature, it's amazing how many things that we can find that are so beautiful that are completely free.
That is so true. Like WBAI.
Like WBAI.
Well, it's not completely free. We do have fundraisers from time to time to time to time to time. And, you know, that's important too. I guess we could start off by reminding those of you who are listening and are awake at this moment, we have an event taking place in the Bronx, the Boogie Down Bronx, and it is in honor of Women's History Month. Assemblywoman LaToya Joyner invites you to her second annual Women's History Month Wellness Celebration. And it is in partnership with PS073. And it is this coming Saturday, March 26, 11 a.m. till 3 p.m. The address is 1020 Anderson Avenue in the Bronx. And if you want to use your little computer to find it, or those locator thingies, what are they called? GPS. The zip code is 10452, 1020 Anderson Avenue, the Bronx, 10452. And I'm being very specific about this because it is absolutely free. And you will be able to enjoy massage therapy from 1 to 3 p.m. That's right, free massage from 1 to 3 p.m. And during the day's activities will be meditation from 11 till 12. Yoga from 12 till 1, Zumba from 1 to 3, and massage therapy also from 1 to 3. And I believe it's for everyone. Is it just for women or is it for everyone?
It's probably for everyone.
I think anyone
can.
No one will be turned away. But it is in honor and in celebration of Women's History Month. And I will be there, Catherine, and I think you'll be there
as
well, Paulette. And I'll actually be facilitating the hour of meditation from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. People are going to be very surprised if they think they're going to sit down cross-legged. Because I facilitate and I teach moving meditation. So some of it will be inner connecting, relaxation, but also there'll be some gentle movement to prepare people for their yoga and Zumba. Hmm. So it'll be nice.
Lovely.
Again, that's this coming Saturday, March 26, 11 a.m. till 3 p.m. at PS073 in the Bronx, 1020 Anderson Avenue. The zip is 10452, and they actually do have a phone number for those of you who wish to call for more information. It is 718-538-2000. That's 718-538-2000. And as we go forward, we're going to be paying more attention to what's happening in the boroughs. Hmm. The Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn. We'll try to get Staten Island in there as well. And, you know, Manhattan gets a lot of play, but we won't leave out Manhattan either.
Okay.
So we want to let you know opportunities of events that are taking place in the local region of this signal. So that means we also should include New Jersey and the many cities in New Jersey. There's quite a lot. So there's a lot of opportunity to connect with our audience. And for our audience, our listeners, you and I all to connect with events that are going around town that can have an impact on our health, that can make a difference for us in terms of all that self-care stuff. You know, it's hard to do all by yourself, so it's nice to have that support. So we heard an interesting song from, in addition to our opening theme, Michelle and Diotello, we heard the song Earth. And then we heard Johnny Cash singing a cappella, almost, with the drums, The Vanishing Race. And it is from his album Bitter Tears. Johnny Cash sings ballads, I guess. Ballads of the American... I have to open this up. Ballads of the American Indian. Ballads of the American Indian by Johnny Cash. And so, since we played Johnny Cash, how about a little Walela?
Okay. Lovely.
Thank you.
And of course, that was Walela, Amazing Grace. A lovely, lovely, lovely tune. And I like Walela. Wait. Okay, now talk.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Melissa Etheridge, it's the Etheridge family that makes up Walela.
Is it really?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's cool enough. I know that it's. I enjoy them.
Yeah, I think it's Melissa Etheridge, her mother, and Melissa's daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe I'm right.
I thought there were three. I thought they were sisters. We're gonna. That's. It makes
they
sense.
They include a sister also, but.
Yeah, I just thought it was three sisters. It just goes to show you. I just listen to the music. I don't follow them all. Let's see. Walela. Cherokee sisters sing their way to stardom, it says. Yep, Rita Coolidge.
Rita Coolidge, excuse me.
Rita Coolidge.
Not Etheridge.
Yes. That's okay. Walela, the trio of Rita Coolidge, her sister, Priscilla Coolidge, and Priscilla's daughter. So you got most of it right.
The name was wrong.
Laura Satterfield is the daughter, I guess. Hmm. Okay. You know, it's nice to have the internet. It's an amazing thing.
It is.
It's an amazing gift to all of us. I just found a cute little mime, is it? Or meme, do they call it? The little pictures with sayings on them. And I was really touched by it because it's a picture of a little baby with the stamp on his forehead, you know, the product stamp. And you could see like these little hands holding on to this product stamp like they're bars or a prison. And underneath this cute little face it says, "As soon as you are born, you are given a name, a religion, a nationality, and a race. You spend the rest of your life defending a fictional identity."
Wow.
I thought that was pretty interesting because it feels very true. It really does feel true to me that it gives me a moment of pause to wonder, who would I be? Who would we all be if we didn't have that at our birth of being? I mean, I guess a name is cool enough.
Mm-hmm.
But to be given a religion, nationality, and race all in one fell swoop is interesting because it had not that taken place, there would be no identification of color or race or nationality. These are all learned behaviors. I find that fascinating. So who would you be if you were just born with nothing, no identification?
Who would I be? Wow.
What would you be like if you were born without an identification?
In a funny way, I'd rather be blind.
Not me.
Well, because blind people have to actually use the rest of their senses very well. I mean, maybe I'd have a stick to be my eyes, but in terms of interacting with people, I think if I would just interact with any human being, it really wouldn't matter, mm-hmm. you know, and without the.
So you're likening this to being blind?
Well, if all of it is something that's a construct, and so much is based on, I guess, maybe ideology or for whatever reasons or race or what have you, I think in a world where you can feel people and speak to people and touch people, but not necessarily, you know, have to look at someone and label them and, you know, put them in a container somewhere.
Yeah, I see your point, but But what I was speaking of is not other people, yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you be?
That's a really good question.
I mean,
someone
it's something
blind, but
I mean, it's an interesting.
Who would you be? I guess I'm answering the question with another question.
I don't know. I really don't know who I would be or how I would be had I not been given a religion, a nationality, or a race upon birth. I'm not sure. But it would only be useful if everybody was out religion, nationality, and race. You know, if the society where children were just born and were not told anything in terms of identification would we know what that would be like, I think, I'm supposing.
But
I can remember being young enough that I had no real concept of nationality or race.
I think I've met a lot of people as I've grown up who, for instance, are maybe world travelers and who really just enjoy interacting with people from other parts of the planet and really just appreciate the beauty and the variety in the human family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of them. Where it really... It's not about the label, and we're all spiritual people on one level or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about feeling the other person. It's about friendship. It's about bond. It's something very human that has nothing to do with nationality or any of the other stuff. And I think from friends that I've made, a lot of us sort of have that thing in common. You know, we may come from countries where other languages are spoken, but we both have that curiosity about an appreciation for the value of human life, for the value of friendship, for the value of bonding with people who you may not even be able to communicate verbally with, but you can both appreciate the same joke. You know you're laughing at the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very beautiful thing.
Yeah, I've even had experiences like that when not speaking the other language, person's language, I found that it's not so difficult to communicate on a human-to-human level.
Absolutely.
And language is not required.
No.
Not really.
And you can share a joke and you both understand what the funny nature of mm-hmm. it is. Yeah.
I just think that that's really... I thought that was like a fascinating concept because, you know, you could take it far beyond that in terms of how we identify with our careers and professions and we identify with our skill sets and or our identify with possessions. You know, there are so many things to identify with and to, in a way, have it stand in as a representative for who we are, somehow showing other people our value through our possession of things or possession of wealth or possession of some kind of position. And it's easy to fall into. It's very easy to fall into. I have had some real awakenings of how much I had fallen into, you know, job positions, and found a great sense of identification with it. And upon leaving that job, feeling a sense of loss of self. But it was really an illusion because I'm not a job, I'm a person.
That's right.
But it's easy to fall into the identification, identifying ourselves by something outside of ourselves. And so I think I do have a sense of who I might be if I hadn't been, you know, guided through parenting and society down the path of religion, nationality, and race. I mean, I think a lot of us know what kind of child we were. And it would be interesting to see what that looks like as an adult.
No, I remember distinctly. I was always curious about other cultures.
Yeah, so you're a lot. So you're very much in alignment with who you were as a child.
Definitely.
Yeah, I feel that too. I feel very much in alignment, but I've lost a lot of the bodaciousness I think I had as a child. I was a tomboy in the sense that I would go out into the wilderness. How much wilderness can there be in a city neighborhood? But but when I was growing up, there was a lot of brush, you know, trees. There was a lot of natural environment in the 50s, early 60s. Not everything had been turned to stone. And so I could remember wandering long distances for hours at a time and wasn't very old. I wasn't in school yet. And I was wandering and climbing trees and picking berries off of bushes and eating them and stuff. And I was like maybe 4. Maybe.
Goodness.
Between 4 and 6, definitely. Because it was before I went to school. So I think that, and then after school, probably for a while there, I was pretty much one of the boys until puberty hit. And then everything changed.
Okay.
So, I kind of miss that self. So I'll put it out there as a question for those of you who are tuned in, might have a thought about who are you really if you don't have a name or a religion or a nationality or a race. And you, let's say, don't have a profession either. But really, without all of the outer social identification and structure, who would you be? Who are you? And it's an interesting question because, to me, finding freedom is getting in touch with that part of ourselves and to find ways to channel that unbridled child into our daily life. To me, that's freedom. And so I'll put it out there as a question. 2-1. No, I'm calling the. I'm giving the pledge line. Oh, help me, help me, help me. Okay, the number is 718-780-8888. I take it back. The number is 718-780-8888. You know, it gets to be habitual, this fundraising jive.
Someone's calling.
Okay, so we do have a call. Let's see. Say hello. Good morning. You're on the air.
Oops, wait.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air now.
Who would I be if I didn't know that, you know, that question you said? I was thinking, Kathy, that, and your friend, fighting for a just society was a part of my, you know, when I was 7 years old, that's when I knew there was a racism, and we had many other problems in society, and that was, it was a Jewish, you know, awareness that you must fight for to make society better because of, there was Jewish oppression, and we fight for each other's oppressions, and you're saying if I didn't know that I was, I mean, I had my parents pass that was the tradition that was passed on. So you're saying there was no context, but that was the context which gave me. So you want me to remove that?
Well, it's a question of, you know, the question really is one in which we can contemplate what the world would be like had we not been born into this structure of, as you say, injustice, right?
No, the funny thing you're saying, Kathy, I think I have some insight, which is that other people maybe who aren't taught by their parents because of their religion, whatever their religion is, or in other words, just look out for yourself, don't look out for the other guy. So I guess I was born into the socialist tradition, which is look out for the other guy. Not the capitalist, screw the other guy. No, have compassion for the other guy, the other person.
Now, well, but if you're compassionate, then you'll really have to be compassionate with the capitalist as well.
Okay, bad example. I'm trying to follow what you just did, but with that, the way you just twisted that. But let me see if I can. Having compassion versus not having compassion. Okay, so if I'm a boy of 7 years old who's being taught to be compassionate, as opposed to the other children who are not being taught compassion, my peers at 7 years old, at 10, at 13, they were not compassionate. Okay, they were taught to look out for just themselves and their family. Okay.
I understand. See, that's the whole point of the exercise.
Right.
Is to discover what we would be as human beings if we were not conditioned. You know, because like the children who are growing up, as you say, looking at just caring about themselves.
Right.
Are conditioned into that behavior.
That's right.
And you, as you spoke,
were conditioned
into
the opposite.
Being
right.
The compassionate person.
Right.
So what I'm asking you to do is to go before the conditioning arrived in your life.
Okay.
And to sort of look within yourself to see who you are. It's very likely you would be compassionate anyway, but that's, you know, I'm not
right.
saying
the,
that
the,
you
the nurturing
wouldn't, or
principle.
Wouldn't be. I'm just saying that perhaps it is that you are, what would your life be like if you could reach back and see who you would be if you could have grown up in a natural state?
All right, Kathy, I'll give it more thought. Okay,
thank you. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, I'm on the air.
You are.
How are you doing? My name is Thomas. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Thomas.
I'm listening to your discussion, and I disagree totally with many things you're saying.
Okay.
You're saying that the genetic development that we've had for as long as man has been on the planet to go away. Why?
I'm not saying it could go away. What I'm asking is to imagine who you could be or would be had you not been born into this pre-existing structure.
Okay.
To imagine how your life might flower or what natural capacities you may have that might have been suppressed because of the structure that we're born in.
What talents might
you have had you not had your energies directed in a certain way? And so it's an exercise of the imagination. It's not an exercise of discounting the particular situation in the world. It's an exercise in imagination to move back in time to a time perhaps or a moment perhaps when we were more innocent. And before in our approach to life, and as we grow older, we see the inequities and things change. But there is a point at which we could perhaps imagine what our life could be if we reached back into that sort of pristine self and brought forth some of that energy into our current existence.
I hear what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a father.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a child of a mother,
right.
And I'm a child of a father.
Okay.
My children I try to get them to think in a manner that they can live in the world as it is, not as a fantasy. So you're saying that the genetic makeup, which I may be, to throw away.
I didn't say to throw away anything.
So if you're saying imagine, what value...
I'm not. The value of it is in moving to a space where we can exist in the world in our fullness.
Let me say this: we live in a world where the ethnicities that is developed by people develop power by economic, social, political structures. That is the world we live in. At some point in time, we have to think of, if we imagine, how could we have structures for people who are placed in deficient positions, from the African in Africa, from the African-American who is African in America, dealing with all these different tribes and ethnicities as they exist. I'm first and foremost a student of Chinwenzu, Dr. Amos Wilson. These books and their works deal with the world as it is. The problem many people have, they want to imagine a world that does not exist because they are placed in deficient positions. It is incorrect to even have this dialogue about a fantasy world when we live in a real world with power structures that exist to destroy us. We live in a time of genocide. In a time of genocide, the best thing we could do is imagine a world where these power structures don't exist. I don't get this conversation.
Well, okay, keep listening. Maybe you'll get it after a time, or you won't. That's fine.
We
don't have to agree.
I'm not saying that, but it's a possibility you could be wrong. Is there a possibility whatever has happened to you in your life and what you see
I think that it's entirely possible for me or you to be wrong.
Okay,
it's entirely possible for you or myself to be correct or right. And it's entirely possible that it's not, this conversation is coming from a different perspective. You're taking a very serious tone with it, and I'm taking a tone from the perspective of healing. I'm speaking from the perspective of a healer.
You're
speaking from the perspective of, you know, the bold, bare reality that you experience. That's okay. I don't happen to be taking that perspective. That's just the way it is.
Do you have children?
I am not taking the same perspective as you.
Do you have a child? Do you have children?
What difference does it make?
It matters in how you view the world if you have a...
You know what? I think it's time for you to understand that you're speaking for yourself.
No, I disagree.
Well, I'm sorry. I have other
I'm allowed to disagree with you.
You are allowed to disagree with you, but I'm not going to continue to argue with you. Okay?
I'm not arguing.
Sorry. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Yes. You're on the air.
Okay. I just wanted to weigh in a little bit on the topic at hand right now.
All right.
I would like to say I do appreciate the kind of dialogue that you're bringing at this kind of hour, only because, you know, it kind of makes you think, you know, once the day and all its worries and whatnot are in the past, you get time to settle down and think. So I do appreciate this dialogue, number one. And I would like to say that if we were to start off with a blank slate once again in terms of no social standings, no social status, no social belongings, no social introduction to anything, I do believe at some point, although we're free and we're not able to grasp the concept of many things, there will still be some kind of conflict going on in the world, only because we do have leaders and followers. And by that, I mean, for example, if you have two children who don't really understand the concept of being mean, and they don't understand the concept of being nice. One child just may feel nice. The other one just may feel angry. Them two have an internal conflict or external conflict with each other. And then from there, I feel as though there will always be conflict only because we have leaders in this world and we have followers. People tend to side with a certain aspect. And if one person is more believable than another, then they tend to take that person's worries and strife on in life. So therefore, I do think if we were to even just come back or think of ourselves as like newborns again into this world with a fresh slate, we would experience life from a more of a personal aspect in terms of we don't have the necessary stress that maybe like we do get from social standings and social situations. I know oftentimes with religion, people feel stressed with identity in terms of, you know, associating with being race and white, black, X, Y, Z. So even though we were to come off back as a blank slate, I think there would still somehow be conflict between one another.
I do understand what you're saying, but I'm not talking about moving into a blank slate. What the question I'm posing is that we go back into ourselves to the point of rediscovering our nature, whatever that might be. So yes, your nature may be that of a leader. Your nature may be that of a artist. Your nature may be that of a musician and music. You may want to build things. You may want to take apart things. What I'm really speaking to is not to pretend that we are a blank slate in our society as it currently exists. I'm speaking from the perspective of, on an individual level, as a being on this planet, we are born with certain gifts and certain talents and certain predispositions. And if you look at young children who are playing together, you'll see most often, well, there's going to be some kind of pecking order. It's not going to be based necessarily on a religious belief or a racial issue. It's going to be something else. And so what I was speaking to is that as we grow up and we encounter these different structures, we lose touch with the essence of who we were born as, the potential that came with us when we were born is often stymied or squashed in the course of these structures being laid on top of who we are. So I'm looking at it from the perspective of healing oneself and bringing oneself back to their fullness despite the fact that we live in a world with challenges. So I'm not trying to say that challenges don't exist or that racism doesn't exist, but I do want to say that it matters if one is living their life in fear, if one is living their life with a sense of low self-esteem, if one is living their life with hopelessness, and so this is what happens, or living their life in perpetual conflict. And so there's a way to live in the world where one can express in their life a level of freedom. And from my perspective, in order to get to that point, it's useful to go back into your core potential that you came in with before it was tampered with. So so that's really the point I was trying to make.
Okay, I have a question. Maybe you can answer it. So as the last portion of your statement, you said to go back into the core in which we were, in which we came into the world without any dispositions. So what are some ways you think that we can actually try and get back to the core so that we are able to live, I guess, a life of peace without the external factors that have influenced us by the time we get to the age 21. By that time, we get to the age of 30 plus.
Yeah. Well, the truth of it is that we are born with some kind of disposition. I'm not saying that we don't. Mm-hmm. We are born with a disposition. And, you know, a child can come into the world being shy. A child can come into the world being bodacious. Mm-hmm. What I'm suggesting is that we allow our memory to flow back into that earlier part of our lives to remember who we were. Mm-hmm. And it may be by remembering what kind of toys we had or liked to have. It could be by remembering what we really enjoyed doing. Maybe it was swimming. Maybe it was, playing with crayons. And okay. So what I'm saying is that when we can remember what it is, we can take ourselves emotionally into that feeling of what that was like. And mm-hmm. that sense of being empowered and free and expressive. And then and begin to nurture that feeling into our current life. And as we nurture that feeling into our current life, we can look at what we're doing now and decide, is this really nourishing me in the same way? And if it's not, then we can question whether this is something we need to be doing or if maybe we want to redirect our lives in another way. Maybe someone is working as a lawyer, but it's killing their soul because it's not something they really love. It's something that's going to make them money. Mm-hmm. So that person might want to figure out a path to restructure their life so that they can have that joy and passion in whatever it is they're doing.
Okay.
And in the same way, we can trace back into where the anger began or where the low self-esteem began, because usually those things occur in childhood, but they're things that we encounter that shut us down. So I can remember when I was in the fourth grade, I was in a dance production. I was totally out there. I was totally happy, totally free. And I was out in this dance production. I was doing this little dance, hopping around with the other little fourth graders.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that when I was in the fourth grade, I was really fully developed, and I had like a C-cup breast on my bra. And so when I was jumping around with the other little skinny girls, my breasts were like going boingy, boingy, boing. And so the kids started laughing at me, and I was horrified, and I retreated. And so I, into myself, and after that, I didn't want to do anything ever. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to be in public. So I had to trace back into the root of the thing that wounded my sense of self and my sense of pride. Mm-hmm. To be able to get behind that into the joy that I felt, what encouraged me to do that, and just work through the other issues. I mean, it's like we were all fourth graders. It's not that big a deal.
Right.
But I had to trace back to figure out what it was that caused me to be introverted as an adult. So that's kind of what I'm speaking about, of going back into the fullness of who you are and then get that feeling of fullness and carry it forward into our current life.
Well, what about the person that had a traumatic situation? Maybe not traumatic. As a child, you tend to over-exaggerate with certain aspects or things that may happen to you. But what about the person that just decided to repress that memory of when something bad happened? So now they really can't remember because they shunned it from themselves for so long. So now they really can't get in touch with that memory and that aspect. But that is the very aspect that can possibly change everything. What would you suggest to someone who maybe have been repressing so many memories in so many situations? Let's say someone would have passed away and they just don't want to bring that up. What would you suggest to a person in that aspect so they can try to heal themselves?
I would suggest writing. To me, writing is really the thing that could heal a lot, because you write through your feelings and how you're feeling, and it sort of allows it to come out of your system onto the page, and it becomes less, it can become less potent in your body. But also it's the same thing. As you're riding through the pain, you could also carry yourself back and allow memories of things that were good, and you can write about that. And then you can follow the memories of things that seem to be okay and trace back the things that were not okay, and somewhere in the middle you're going to find the energy of that issue. You don't actually have to remember, but if you can identify the feeling and work on releasing the feeling, you don't really, it isn't absolutely necessary to remember it to heal it.
Yeah, I asked that question mainly because, like, you know, like for me, I have pretty good memory in terms of things that may have happened recently. So you can say pretty good short-term memory, but things by a certain age, I really just can't remember. It's not that I'm even trying not to remember. It really just doesn't stick to me. Some people can tell you about a memory that happened when they were four. I mean, I'm sure it's because maybe they've always told the same story and they understand that feeling. They've held on to it. But for the most part, a majority of my memories, I can't remember past, like, oh, before a certain age.
And that is the value of using imagination. Therein is the value of using imagination. So if you don't have an actual memory, you imagine yourself as a two-year-old. And then you just imagine what that might feel like, what you might be exposed to, what you might want to play with, what colors you might like. So imagination can be a very powerful tool if you don't have the actual memories.
Right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, we lost a lot of calls, but that was a good call. Hello, you're on the air. Yes, you're on the air live. This is Heart of Mind. Okay. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Please turn off your radio.
Hello?
Yes, please turn off your radio. You'll be able to hear better.
Radio, okay.
Yes, turn off the radio. Hello? You're listening to Heart of Mind over WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Catherine Davis with Paulette Spencer. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Catherine.
Yes.
This is Professor Rhythm.
I'm sorry, I can barely hear you.
Hi, do you hear me now?
Yeah.
Hi, Catherine. This is Professor Rhythm, and I call myself a brother from another planet.
Uh huh.
I'm kind of in tune with exactly what you're saying because through my journey of spirituality, you know, I've finally arrived back at that point that you're talking about, where I realize that, you know, it's like one, it's like we are one human race, and there's really no differences as far as all of these labels and stuff that we put on each other. They're really just artificial things that we decided to dream up. So it causes me to laugh a lot of times when I look at the situation as though I were not from this planet. And I was just looking from it like as if, you know, I was happened to be flying through space and then I observed the planet. I say, wow, look at all these people. You know, they're one race, but they're treating each other like all this craziness, you know, and they're smart. They seem smart enough to have it all under control, but yet they're going around like insane people. What is the problem? They're going like insane beings. And there must be some kind of a psychosis that, you know, that I can't fathom, you know, I can't figure out what's going on with that, you know, because they really seem intelligent. They seem as though if they wanted to spread all the stuff that they needed to sustain themselves, you know, equally and all be happy with that, and even control their population so that no one would ever, you know, be too crowded and everything. They seem that they have the ability to do that, but they're just not doing it. Like something's wrong. I don't get it. What's happening with these people?
Well, you know, it's one of the things to remember is that they are us and we are they. You know, it's not really just them, these people or those people, in a sense that we are all a part of this madness to some degree. And I just think that the human race has been subjected to a lot of control and programming for many, many generations. And hopefully we can work our way back to the truth of who we are as beings.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, that's what it seemed like you were talking about. Like, you know, going back to the essence of just when you were born, what you came with, rather than all of the indoctrinations and, you know, layering of all of the all kinds of, like, insane notions that... I mean, you know, I understand the cultures and society and all the things that we talked about, you know, and hierarchy and some other, and leadership as compared to people that like to follow, and, you know, all of those things are definitely a part of it. You know, you can't just separate all that stuff out when that is what reality is.
You're absolutely right. I think that there are natural leaders. But I would not characterize anybody we see in our political scene as a leader. See, that's the difference. These people are not leaders. A leader is someone who has the interests of the people at heart. And the politicians that we see, I don't consider them to be leaders. And I think, you know, so that's why I feel like it's there may be some real leaders among us, and I'm sure there are. But the ones we're seeing put on the screen are not true leaders. But if we can hearken back to our true selves, then those of us who really are leaders, who really have the motivation and the capacity to move people in a way that is constructive and positive and for the good, to me, that's what a leader is.
I think that
those people who had those qualities have probably been suppressed culturally in society.
By the greedy people who want to be leaders.
Not just by the greedy people, but by the schools, by the religions,
right,
by the politics. You know.
So what do you attribute the original insanity from? Because we're talking about if we're talking about the natural state that when we come in, that we should understand that we're all just one, you know, entity, and that we should be just caring for each other as one entity, and then everything would be pretty much balanced. And so what do you attribute that unbalance to?
Well, I guess that would be a fairly big discussion, but a lot of it has to do with then we will get into a political discussion, but a lot of it has to do with those structures, the religious structures, the governmental structures, the structures of colonialism, the structures of, you know, greed and power. You know, all of that stuff came into play and has been part of the human history for a very long time, at least since the Sumerians, I guess. Mm-hmm. It goes at least as far back as Sumeria. It probably goes further. Might even go further back than that.
Oh, Lemuria.
But
yeah.
I'm just saying that there are certain cultures in the world that have managed to somewhat stay free of all of this. You know, those cultures who have survived colonialism and I guess, integrating into the modern way. So they're very far and few between at this point, you know, Aboriginal people left in the world who maintain their original cultures. And I'm not suggesting that that's the answer. I think the answer is somewhere in between of hearkening back on an individual to our pure gifts that we were born with, and culturally hearkening back to the strength when the culture was a culture of strength and dignity and was able to hold its own in the world culturally and spiritually and politically. And so for me, a lot of it is about just knowing and understanding and education. Just my only, for instance, is even just as a black person, being a black woman, being educated in America would lead me to believe that black history started with slavery. And that's a falsehood, right? So I just think it's important to go back to the point of, you know, the long, long millennia that black people have been on this earth. And so to me, having that knowledge is significant in what I'm talking about, going back to, you know, going back into the fullness of who we are.
But don't those things, even these things, these notions of slavery and all, don't all those things seem, I don't know, they're laughable concepts. I mean, you know, when I say
slavery is real.
Reasons why I have compassion, so I'm not really saying laughable, like, you know.
Yeah, no, I know, I understand what you're saying,
I'm sure you do. These concepts are just like, just so insane, they're so erratic, just, you know, to someone looking from not being on this planet.
If you were visiting from another planet, they would say that you're laughable.
I remember President Obama. He was ribbing the Republican Party, and he was saying, you know, like, these guys come walking into, they say there's no global warming, you know, even though 99% of the scientists say so. And they'll walk into the Senate room with a snowball and say, this is proof that there's no global warming, you know. And they actually come in and they say that, you know. It's like,
okay, so I'm going to try to catch a couple more of these calls. Right. Thank you so much for calling in.
All right, thank you very much.
Bye. Sorry, the number is 718-780-8888. I was trying to get to your call, and I didn't get to it quite fast enough. If you want to call back, it's 718-780-8888. Very interesting. Okay, so I'm going to put, let's see, I've got two of you on hold. We'll bring one up at a time. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning. How are you? I'm not sure of the topic, but I just want to address one thing. I just walked in from work. How are you, ladies? The reverend or the gentleman that was previously on, I just want to let him know slavery was real, and in some instances, it's still real. But what I wanted to touch bases on is what's happening with this election. It's not a joke. It's sort of scary in a sense because I'm not sure if we're going to be able to vote for who we want, but I'm going to vote anyway, you know. But it's scary to the sense that Mr. Trump is winning and bragging about it, and he's like the biggest slave master that can ever be, and he's denying everything that he's saying, but yet and still is very negative. And riots, if he doesn't win, there's going to be a riot. Okay. Imagine President Obama before he won the election twice saying, well, if I don't win the nomination, there's going to be a riot. Okay, a black man saying this. You know, it's just the racism that's so blatant in this country should not be considered a joke because it's not and it's still real. But we have to just take hold to who we are. And I am a black woman, 63 years old, and loving every moment of being who I am. But I see this this particular election as scary, and I'm going to vote because I have no other choice. Harriet Tubman will probably slip over in her grave if I don't, and all black folks should, but they should pay attention to the fact that we need to vote, but we need to pay attention to. To me, it's like going in backwards into nonsense that's now being thrown back into the history books, saying, okay, well, it's okay because I have all the white supremacists behind me, and I'm telling you that. You know, that's how I see Mr. Trump.
Okay, that isn't what we were talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I appreciate your call. Thank you.
Hello,
you still there? Hello? No, okay, we lost our other call as well. Don't know if we have much more time for calls. The number is 718-780-8888. I'm not particularly afraid of the elections. Hi, could you please hold on? Hold on, okay? Hi, please hold on. We'll get to you.
How are you?
Hello, yes, you're on the air.
I just wanted to thank you so much. Is this Heart of Mine?
It is Heart of Mine, Earth at Midnight, yes.
And I salute you. I just had to say I knew this was you, but you just had so many people on that were so diverse, but actually, and all on the same plane, and you came in with your own, and, you know, you tweaked it, what you went, whatever. But, I mean, it was just such a good program, and it was very enlightening to hear so many people thinking on the same level. As like you said, I mean, it's all different perspectives, and you judge where you are at. You know, we don't all start in the same spot, you know. So it's very hard to judge where everybody is at that. But you hit a lot of points, and I just wanted to say that was a good show tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And I don't know what your whole point of it was. I mean, collectively, what you really wanted to say, but you said it with, like, beating around the bush. I mean, I don't know what you really want to say because we're at a crucial point in mankind's evolution, I believe, and we must unite in all, you know, it's a new world order, as you can call it. Because, listen, that's scary. Everybody's afraid of that. But corporations have taken over the world. We are now puppets of corporations that are bidding to race to the bottom. And this is a serious, you know, question that mankind has to answer. What are we going to be? Are we going to be animals that feed upon everybody's fears, you know, drudgery and misery and a big brother and everything else? Or are we going to be an open society where we unite as a one to be a species, which is common sense, and makes like a new world order, where not a few people take all the money doing nothing but giving orders, and all the rest suffer with disease and all this chemicals and pollution and everything else, yada. It's insanity. And to see some people that understand that, I'm enheartened. I'm enamored by the camaraderie of it.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of us do understand that we have different ideas of what to do about it. But from my perspective, as much as racism is there and it's a real phenomena, and as much as greed and all that is there, it's a real phenomena. When I talk about hearkening back, it's important to remember that how race came about was to create a situation of divide and conquer. That's how racism, that's why it's being fueled, so that whites and blacks and browns and yellows are all going to be at each other's throats, and while we're busy killing each other, the guy at the top or the bottom, wherever you want to, however you want to call it, is siphoning off all the resources. And until we stop hating on each other, that's what helps to facilitate the takedown of humanity. So at
you just proved my point that you know exactly what is going on.
Yeah.
Because that's been going on forever. And I was a little kid when we used to do that stuff. Make my brother fight the other brother, and while there two were fighting, I'd run off and steal his Easter candy.
Yeah.
I you know what I mean? That's what they're doing to people. They're making us fight against each other, and as we're arguing and bickering, split right down the middle, they're pickpocketing us off the kazoo. Anyway, you got it. You go, girl, and I appreciate your show, and God bless, and I hope we get together on more issues like that.
Thank you for your input. Bye-bye.
Right, thanks, man. Have a good one. Peace out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have, maybe we can get in one more call very quickly. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Yes, you are on the air. Please turn off your radio.
Yes, I listen to your program.
Please turn off the radio now.
Yes, it is off.
Okay, thank you.
Now, it's a very interesting program with everyone trying to say what they were conditioned to say. And we first get to know who you are. We all came in this life blank slate. We're conditioned to accept what we're saying. If we go beyond that, we'll find out who we are and where we're from. We must first know that we are a spirit, and that spirit should control the body, and that body, which is desire, do go into having needs, having wants. How can we arrive at it when, first of all, we are conditioned in this world to accept total materiality and nothing spiritual? We lost our spiritual value. And by losing our spiritual value, we have lost ourselves.
Yes.
And we back and find that spiritual value that is within us and educate ourselves from the within. Everything that you need, you already possess that. It's here.
Absolutely. But thank you so much for calling. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. So we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay.
All right, God bless. Bye-bye.
Peace.
Peace out. So, Paulette, what are your thoughts? We don't really have time for more phone calls, but that was an interesting exchange.
Definitely. I think I remember hearing you talk about your experience of just sort of the sense of freedom and freedom mm-hmm. to wander and stuff. When I think of myself as a child, despite whatever things I went through, you know, in childhood or what have you,
mm-hmm.
I think deep down I was a very happy spirit.
Mm.
And so, you know, I think I tend to gravitate to other people who are kind of happy spirits. And you can, you know, each person has their narrative, you know, their challenges, things that they go through. They survive on different levels. But I can remember, you know, just this sort of sense of happiness, of, you know, fun discovering things. And I remember, you know, maybe being 6 or 7 or something like this, or maybe a little bit older, and finding kids that I was going to school with in the South Bronx who were, his families were from maybe Bangladesh or some, you know, countries where they wear sari.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember as a little kid, I just loved the idea of being able to wear a sari. And I didn't have to be from the country. It was just the beauty of the fashion. And I remember just being a little bit obsessive with having my own sari and sort of parading around. We had mm-hmm. a fashion show, and it was just so cool to have my sari on. You know, I mean, little things like that, I think, was really a delicious kind of feeling for me to kind of appreciate how you can enjoy variety.
And how often are you enjoying that feeling nowadays?
I think I've experienced it a lot in my life, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now is sort of a transition period for me.
Yeah.
But much of my life has actually been around similar populations where we were all working for the same mission. And the beauty of it was that mm-hmm. people I was working with come from every corner of the globe. So there's culture, there's language, but when you all understand what the mission is, you sort of lock into that, and you can appreciate that how much similarity there are.
Mm-hmm. And that can be a beautiful thing. And especially when it can be maintained in the forefront that everyone is working for the mission and they're not working in competition. When people start to sink into that competitive mode, the mission very often suffers.
Definitely.
Yeah. So we have to make some time for our upcoming program, Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund, will be coming up in a few minutes. What time is it? But we have about 8 minutes. I'm going to try this phone call, but it has to be quick. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I just wanted to first of all say that the planet that you saw tonight in front of the moon was Jupiter.
Jupiter, thank you.
And the second thing, you know who this is. The second thing is that we're just past the point of the full moon. The full moon was 8 o'clock this morning.
Oh, wow.
You also wanted to acknowledge the fact that we had an eclipse this morning.
Wow, that's right.
A lunar eclipse, right?
That's okay. Right. The lunar eclipse was...
Ha, ha, ha. But I want to I wanted to answer your question. If I was in that state of pre-programming, I'd be synesthetic.
You would be what?
Synesthetic.
What does that mean?
You've had tapes about it. Synesthesia is the ability to taste sound and to feel color.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That would be, I mean, it was an exercise, and immediately I tapped into it. I felt that that was as you, the word you used, predisposed.
Yeah.
That would be something, and I think, well, once again, thinking is not the right term, even though I'm a science guy. Mm-hmm. Kids already have those things, and for the rest of the week, people should really just spend a little time actually going back and trying to feel or remember those things, because we come in with it and we all see it in the little kids. They all have it. Just like Paulette was talking about dressing up, and, you know, certain people grab their hammer. You know, I was the person on the block that all the adults would bring their broken clocks to.
Wow.
And I would take them apart and put them back together. And when they come back to get them, they go, "What are those extra parts?" And I'd say, I'd say that you don't need it for it to work. So, you know, anyway, I just wanted to answer that. And as always, keep the good work up as well as keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course. Have a good night. Good morning.
Thank you.
Bye-bye for now. And I guess we shall sign off. You're listening to, or have been listening to, Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine with...
Paulette Spencer.
Thank you, Paulette. And just as a reminder, for those of you who want to have a free massage or other activities, this Saturday, the 26th of March, 11 a.m. till 3 p.m., PS 073 in the Bronx, 1020 Anderson Avenue. The zip is 10452. And the phone number, 718-538-2000. That's 718-538-2000. And it's Assemblywoman Latoya Joyners invites you to her second annual Women's History Month Wellness Celebration. The meditation hour from 11 a.m. till 12 will be facilitated by myself, Catherine Davis. Paulette will also be there. Then there's yoga, Zumba, and massage therapy. That number again is 718-538-2000. And this is for all of the folks in the Bronx. But you could travel if you like. Thank you for joining us, and stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund.
Taste much sweeter. my heart to wear, and may it ever remind you of a taste of honey, a taste much sweeter than wine. I will return, I will return, I'll come back for the was honey.
and good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With me via telephone this morning, Terrence Taylor. And we're going to discuss small screen very interesting series of reviews at the top from Daniel Persons.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. The title of the new French animated film, April and the Extraordinary World, is something of a misnomer, suggesting a fantasy in which a young girl visits a realm of fairies, unicorns, elves, etc. There are fantastical creatures in the film, but none born of gossamer, and the actual French title, as translated by the subtitles, April and the Twisted World, is more fitting, since the film is set in an alternate history where the Napoleonic dynasty has endured decades into the 20th century, the world's great scientific minds, including Einstein, Edison, and Fermi, have mysteriously vanished, and technology has stagnated at the steam-powered level. Coal supplies have dwindled, charcoal stores aren't much better, France is at war with the U.S. over its resources, and the last remaining trees are sequestered in museums, turning Joni Mitchell from an ironic critic of the human condition to historic balladeer. That the film acknowledges the spoilage is interesting. Steampunk doesn't always consider the repercussions of carrying all that filigreed iron and smoke-belching boilers past their real-world expiration dates. But it's very much the heart of April and the Extraordinary World. The titular April, voiced in the French version by Marion Cotillard, is the full-grown daughter of two vanished scientists working on a formula to prolong life. She's got a couple of sidekicks and a sardonic, bioengineered talking cat, and a petty thief, maybe boyfriend, voiced by Philippe Catherine and Marc-André Grandin, respectively, and is being chased by villains who have a Captain Nemo-esque ambiguity to their motivations, directly connected to the maladies of this brave new Iron Age world. Directors Christian Damar and Frank Akinci, in adapting the graphic novel by Jacques Tardy, have retained the artist's muted colors and dense detail, like a comics page come to life, and a very fitting visualization of a world slowly suffocating itself. Lots of rich invention here. The Eiffel Tower now has a twin, and both spires serve as a launching platform for mammoth cable cars, and there's a Wonders of Science exposition that features such amazements as bearded Siamese twin ladies and a mechanical dance floor where couples can pull aside their gas masks for a tender kiss. All in all, April and the Extraordinary World plays like Heavy Metal magazine made a stab at appealing to a family-friendly audience. There is a darkness to its adventures that makes it not the best fit for extremely young eyes. For everyone else, though, it's an engaging adventure. And I know it's late, but I finally got to see Deadpool and had a thought about it. Overall, it's a fun film, and the fact that the titular anti-hero, played by Ryan Reynolds, in the heat of battle frequently breaks the fourth wall to deconstruct superhero franchises as they are currently offered is a clever way of separating yourself from the pack. You know what would have been really radical? If Deadpool had also broken the fourth wall during those moments that are meant to build sympathy for the guy, if he had at those points turned to the camera and said, "See how easy it is to get you on my side?" Director Tim Miller doesn't do that, because as much as Deadpool pokes at the big studio superhero franchise, it is still a big studio superhero franchise, and that would just be a step too far. I don't really hold that against the film, because it is clever enough otherwise, but it does draw the distinction between something truly iconoclastic and something that just offers up the trappings. Being a big-budget studio film, Deadpool has no shortage of eye-popping special effects. The Turkish horror film, Baskin, has only one major effect, and his name is Mehmet Çerahoglu. Making his feature film debut, and perhaps his only film appearance, in this tale of a police squad who stumbles into the lair of a bloodthirsty cult, Mr. Çerahoglu, playing Baba, the cult's leader, grabs attention not just for his charismatic bearing, but for his physical presence, a strange, wizened look that suggests a lifetime spent in seclusion, contemplating unearthly depravities. Really, if the organizers of the Rondo Hatton Awards ever want to change their mascot, Çerahoglu would be a fitting candidate, with more chops as an actor to boot. Baskin, which means police raid in Turkish, by the way, is exactly the kind of film Jim Freund warned me against covering here, reveling as it does in torture and gore for their own sakes, and with a twist ending that's more, oh, come on, then, aha! But there is an emotional underpinning to the policeman's interactions, particularly the relationship between an older officer and his protege, and a surreal intensity culminating in Baba's advent that makes this trip worthwhile for those who can handle it. Speaking of indelible monsters, the artist Chet Czar cavorts with monsters daily, turning out painting after painting of strange and frequently soulful creatures that navigate a path between the grotesqueries of H.R. Giger and the